what physician that you know in his right mind would treat somebody whose medical history he doesn't know, who he's never met, with a substance that meant to do change in their bodies, and just with the advice, have as much or as little of it as you like, but you'll take it for a lifetime because it's meant to help somebody else's teeth. The problem with adding medicine to water is an obvious one of consent, that people can't give their informed consent, which is a basic of medical ethics.
Voters medicate each other whether they want it or not. And if 51% of the voters say, we're going to medicate everybody in town, they all get medicated.
Fluoride in the water. Andy, why haven't you updated this story for so long? It's been, 8 months, 9 months since Dr. Conant was in town and convinced so many in London that we ought to ditch fluoride from our water. What's the story? Well, that's why we're here this morning. Pam Colleen is in studio. And as I always say when Pam's in studio, this is your captain speaking. Fasten your seatbelts. There will be turbulence ahead. Pam, we've waited for this fluoride movement to reach the point where more and more cities are now coming to the conclusion the stuff is hazardous waste.
That's right.
Well, it may do some good when you use it in your toothpaste. You don't put it in your drinking water.
That's
and
right.
And now more and more communities are ditching fluoride. You're looking me right in the eye, and you're not blinking, so you're agreeing with me. And we're going to run that. We're going to give you an update, folks, because so many people have been asking me, what's the story on fluoride? In fact, we now have a city very close to London, Pam, that has ditched fluoride.
That's right. It's near Windsor, Ontario. It's east of Windsor. It's Lakeshore. And there's a population there of about 33,000 people. And they've just voted it out of the water there based on, from what I understand, two reasons. One is that the city council recognizes that people are getting enough fluoride at home in terms of using fluoridated toothpaste and or mouth rinses. And also for the cost. And during our very tight economy right now, it means a lot in order to reduce costs from the city level, and this is one way to do it.
Well, Lakeshore is not very far away. Why don't we just run down the 401 and get Kimberly DeYoung on the line, because she's in Lakeshore. We're going to talk to a number of people on the fluoride issue this hour, so stay tuned. Kimberly, appreciate you joining us this morning.
Hello, Andy.
I'm trying to remember whether I've ever been to Lakeshore, but tell us exactly where Lakeshore is.
I just need to correct you. I'm actually in Windsor, which is about 2 minutes down the road. Lakeshore is kind of a country municipality that surrounds the city and is bordered by many heavier populated areas. So it's just outside of Windsor. It's huge. It spreads across the county, actually, and involves a lot of smaller municipalities.
Tell us about the debate you've had and the decision you've made.
Well, I belong to a group in Windsor that is trying to get the local utility to stop fluoridating our water. Interestingly enough, there are 5 water plants that service the residents of Lakeshore. 3 of them were already fluoride-free, never fluoridated in the first place. The one that Lakeshore just voted to stop fluoridating is called Stony Point. And then the only remaining plant in that services Lakeshore residents is the Windsor plant. And, of course, Windsor Water Treatment Plant supplies the Windsor residents, the residents of the town of Tecumseh, and the residents of the town of Lakeshore. And now just a few of the residents left in LaSalle, Tecumseh, and Windsor, and then a few residents left in Lakeshore are still getting fluoridated water because there's one of their treatment plants, Windsor Utility, that still fluoridates. So we're trying to get them to follow Lakeshore's lead and see that fluoridating our water is just not necessary.
Now, the Windsor Star reported that the Utilities Commission is actually looking into this matter right now. And so I don't know exactly what that means, if they're going to rely on a lot of the flawed data that we've seen thus far, even published by Health Canada. What do you think that they mean? Are they sincere?
I question their sincerity because our group has been contacting them steadily over several months and have been mainly blocked. They're not really replying. They're not really willing to meet with us or see us. I do believe you're right when you say they're going to be relying on information that is flawed. The information coming out of our local health unit is, I got a quote here that this is, this is naturally occurring stuff that they're putting in our water, and it's proven to be effective in reducing tooth decay.
Kimberly, there's so many issues here, but let me just ask you to point to the one key issue that convinced your community to ditch fluoride.
I can't speak for the community. I can speak for myself. I have two small children that have been drinking fluoridated water and have lots of cavities. And I reviewed the information that's available. I started with Health Canada. I wasn't convinced that they only endorse it, but they don't regulate it. There are no toxicological studies. So for myself, if my children have cavities, I'm wondering why am I medicating them based on their thirst. If they're thirsty, they're getting the medication for their teeth. And if they're not thirsty, I guess they're not. It makes no sense to me. And I like my medication to be administered and monitored by a doctor, not my counsel.
Kimberly, I thank you so much for joining us this morning. Just before you go, I want to ask you, what do you have to say to the good folks in London about the fluoride in London's water?
I understand London's been actually actively battling this longer than we have. It is frustrating to see council ignore people so long. And I say, keep up the good fight. We are on the right side. We deserve clean water, safe water for everyone.
Wow. Kimberly, thank you so much. And hats off to you. A high five for convincing your folks you got to get fluoride out of the water. Thanks, Kimberly.
Thank you.
Okay, we want to bring into the conversation Dr. Paul Connett, who was so influential and kind enough to come to the City of London. He deserves an introduction from you, Pam.
Right, this is Dr. Paul Connett. He's calling us from New York, and he is the Executive Director of the Fluoride Action Network and a co-author of the book, The Case Against Fluoride. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Pam. Good morning, Andy. Yes, there is quite an exciting movement. You know, Waterloo voted out fluoridation on October the 25th last year. And we said at the time, this is the Waterloo for fluoridation in Canada. And
line.
Since that time, we now have, wait for it, 28 communities have stopped fluoridation in the last year. And look at the way it's increasing. There were two communities in May, two in June, two in July, three in August, four in September, six in October, and make that one in November today. Tarpon Springs in Florida announced that they were stopping fluoridation. So we've had, as far as Canada's concerned, we've had communities in Ontario, Manitoba, Alberta, three communities in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Quebec, all over Canada, British Columbia, people are saying, no, let's stop this silly practice. And some of these communities are very large, as you probably know. Alberta, Calgary, Alberta was over a million people. And in October the 4th, Pinellas County in Florida, that was 700,000 people have stopped. So over 2.5 million people have been freed from forced fluoridation since Waterloo voted it out last year.
Oh, congratulations. Now, one of the big issues, of course, has to do with safety. And Nicole Kuzmanovic and her husband, Mike, have asked our mayor, Joe Fontana, to basically produce safety studies that show that adding hydrofluorosilicic acid into our water, which is known as fluoride, to show that this substance is safe. And Paul, I mean, to date, Mayor Fontana hasn't been able to produce this data. A lot of people out there today should be going to their city councilors and asking them for safety studies on hydrofluorosilicic acid. Is there any research to show that HFSA or fluoride is safe?
No, I mean, very, as far as Canada is concerned, it's extraordinary. There's practically no health studies on fluoride and fluoridation have been conducted in Canada. And you had this lunacy from Dr. Peter Cooney, your chief dental officer, who's actually the chief lobbyist, one of the big lobbyists for the World Dental Federation. He wears two caps. He lobbies for mercury amalgams. He lobbies for fluoridation. And yet he's supposed to be an independent bureaucrat. But in Dryden, Ontario, a few weeks before they voted it out, fluoridation in 2008, he said, I walked down your high street today and I didn't see anybody growing horns, and you've been fluoridated for 40 years. So we get an indication here of the sophistication of Health Canada's research program on fluoridation.
Dr.
Connett, teams of experts going out to see if people are growing horns, and if they're not growing horns, everything must be hunky-dory.
What a lunacy. Hold that thought. I want to issue a challenge to Pam Clean. Pam, why don't we do it this way? Can you produce a dentist? Because we all know how dentists feel. I'm going to give you just a couple of moments during the commercial break to see if Pam Killeen can come up with a dentist who will look London, Ontario in the eye and say, you gotta get fluoride out of the water. We'll be back to see how Pam answers that challenge in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
The problem with adding medicine to water is an obvious one of consent, that people can't give their informed consent, which is a basic of medical ethics.
And the whole name of the game in pharmacology is to deliver the right dose to the right person at the right time. And that's not what fluoridation does. It can't do it.
Andy Udman, London Today, along with Pam Killeen. We've been saying this for months, if not a year. Fluoride is not safe, and it's not effective. But our medical officer of health in London will not listen. The Middlesex London Health Unit won't even study the issue seriously. So we're just going to keep throwing research at them. And I've issued a challenge to Pam Killeen to come up with a dentist. You've had a couple of moments, Pam. How have you made out?
Well, I'm very excited to say that we have Dr. Bill Osmondson on the line, and he's out west. He's out in Oregon, and he's a part of a class action lawsuit against the city of Seattle for adding this very toxic substance into their municipal water supply. Good morning, Dr. Osmondson.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. And London, you got to get fluoride out of the water. You need freedom.
Mm-hmm. And you're a dentist. I mean, the vast majority of your peers, unfortunately, don't agree with you. Why are they wrong?
Well, I'm not sure that that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at my peers, perhaps in Oregon or in the United States, you're correct. If you look at my peers worldwide, then I think it's probably closer to an even Steven. Most European dental associations do not recommend fluoride supplements, fluoridation. So if you include the European dentists in this, why, then you have a sizable group that is probably half and half. I used to promote fluoridation of water because I didn't look at the research. I just believed what the governments and what the dental associations were saying. But my patients slowly convinced me to look at the information, look at the research, and when you compare both sides of the research, it's like a knee in the gut. Fluoridation does not reduce dental caries like we thought it did. And we're getting too much fluoride from many sources, and the harm, the risks to the teeth and to the bones and to the brain and to the thyroid and to the whole body is very, very serious.
Now, you're filing this class action lawsuit from the group Washington Action for Safe Water and basically pointing out that there are toxic substances that come along with the adding of this form of fluoride.
Yes, that's not part of the lawsuit, but indirectly it is.
Mm-hmm.
There are other chemicals in the water that are of concern, like arsenic and lead. We find that when we measure the blood lead levels of children in fluoridated communities and compare those with non-fluoridated communities, there's more lead in the blood of children in fluoridated communities. And this is obvious because the acid pulls the lead out of the fixtures, the pipes, the solder, the lead that's in the fixtures, and it gives it to the children, and they have more lead in their systems. No amount of lead is considered safe.
Well, this argument, you know, Pam keeps making it, that a fluoride, is, first of all, it's not safe, and it's not effective. I want to, now that we have these two experts lined up here, Pam, let's issue them this challenge to the dentist, Dr. Osmondson. First, that it's not effective, which is just beyond belief for a lot of people. And then we'll ask Dr. Connett why it's not safe. Dr. Osmondson, fluoride. Give us a minute on the fact that it is not effective.
Well, when we compare the different states in the United States, some of them don't fluoridate hardly at all, and some of them fluoridate a lot. But it doesn't make any difference if you fluoridate nothing or if you fluoridate everyone. The decay rate is the same in both. You look at countries in Europe that don't fluoridate and compare those with the United States. It's the same thing. You compare provinces in Canada. British Columbia, for instance, has the lowest decay rate of any province in Canada, and they have almost no fluoridation there. So when we compare larger communities, we don't find a benefit. When we compare costs, we don't find a benefit. In other words, there's just as much dental expenses in a fluoridated community as a non-fluoridated community. So if we look at fluoride over a period of time, for instance, in 1930, there were 12 cavities per child And in about when fluoridation started, it had dropped to about 6 cavities per child. Now it's down to about 1 cavity per child, just a little over 1. And what caused the decay drop before fluoridation started? In other words, half the decay was stopped prior to fluoridation. Obviously, it wasn't fluoridation that stopped the decay. So what caused it? And until we know what caused it, all our research is flawed because we never have controlled for this huge confounding factor. Now, when I was in a small community where there was both fluoride and non-fluoride, I thought I saw a difference between my patients who had fluoridated water and non-fluoridated water. I could look in their mouths and I could say, yeah, you've been getting fluoridated water, and they would usually say yes. The difference is I could see it on their teeth. They were a little shinier tooth. They looked harder, and that is true. However, what I was actually comparing was socioeconomics. The wealthy were in town with the fluoride, and the poor were out in the country and not getting the fluoride. And we know for sure that socioeconomics plays a huge factor in people's health. The rich are healthier, the poor have poorer health. I was comparing socioeconomics, not fluoride.
Doctor, I wonder, what's your time schedule like? Are you able to stay with us for a couple of minutes on the other side of the news break?
Yes.
If you are, that would be wonderful. Dr. Conant, we're waiting to hear your answer. It really bothers me to learn after all these years that believing that fluoride was like God and apple pie and a hug from your mother, only to find out its hazardous waste. It really bothers me to find out that it's not effective, but what really, really bothers me is that it's not safe and that my two grandchildren are at risk because of the fluoride in the water in London, Ontario. And in just a moment, we're going to ask Dr. Conant, what nasty health disorders could my grandchildren have a higher risk of getting because of the fact that our health unit doesn't have the guts to look at this issue? We'll be back in just a moment. Here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. And London, you got to get fluoride out of the water. You need freedom.
Mm-hmm. And you're a dentist. I mean, the vast majority of your peers, unfortunately, don't agree with you. Why are they wrong?
Well, I'm not sure that that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at my peers, perhaps in Oregon or in the United States, you're correct. If you look at my peers worldwide, then I think it's probably closer to an even Steven.
Andy Udman, London Today, along with Pam Colleen. We're talking about fluoride in the water. Where is the battle? People have been asking me, Andy, update the story. We haven't heard about fluoride in the water for months. Well, we have just shared in the last few minutes that we are making progress. Dr. Paul Conant pointing out that there are, Dr. Conant, how many communities since we talked back in March that have now ditched fluoride?
28 since Waterloo voted it out on October the 25th last year. 28 total population have been freed from fluoridation in that period, over 2.5 million people.
And encouraged by that progress, I know you well enough to know that you are now targeting larger communities. Is there any news on that front that you want to share in terms of a larger community that may soon be looking at this issue?
Well, I think the big one was Pinellas County with 700,000 people, and I think Alberta with 1.3 million people. Those were pretty big communities. Peter Vallone Jr. in New York City has introduced a bill to stop fluoridation. That's a city of, what, over 10 million.
But he has a lot of support on the city council, doesn't he? He has about 6 or 7 other city councilors that are on his side.
Not enough.
Not enough.
We need more activism in New York City. So if there are people listening that have friends or relatives in New York City, we need their help. Peter Vallone is very, very strong on this. Very, very strong. But there, I think there's over 40 councilors in New York City. So having 6 or 7 is not nearly enough.
Doctor,
this should come to a head in the spring.
Doctor, I would interrupt you only when we have a news flash. Pam Colleen, we have Dr. Conant, who is a highly respected expert on this subject, a PhD and an author. We have a dentist, Dr. Osmundson, on the issue of fluoride. I want to ask both of you not to give up hope for Canadians getting wise on this fluoride issue. We're starting to get the message. In fact, Pam, Ryan tells me we've just had a call from, would you do the introduction?
Yes, there's some really good news happening on the fluoride front here in Canada in that the Council of Canadians has just passed a resolution at their AGM to support the removal of fluoride from municipal water supplies. And so on the phone we have Emma Lou from the Council of Canadians.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Emma Lou, good morning. I understand you have some news to share for our listeners in London, Ontario, on this issue of fluoride from Maude Barlow and the Council of Canadians. What is the news, Emma?
Well, the news is that although we've been working on the fluoride issue for a number of years now, but we formally passed a resolution at our AGM a couple weekends ago that supports a national policy that we take the lead on, our national leadership on diminishing fluoridation in drinking water across Canada.
Okay, say that again. What is your decision?
So our decision is basically to provide leadership towards a policy of drinking water quality regulation that disallows water fluoridation.
Okay, translation, you're supporting the cities like London who want to ditch fluoride.
Exactly.
Terrific.
That's great news.
Dr. Connett, your reaction.
Well, I think this is fantastic, fantastic news. It's exactly what we need is a network of leaders across the country supporting us. Don't forget, this follows on the heels of Great Lakes United have also voted against fluoridation and Canadian Association for Physicians for the Environment, doctors saying no to fluoridation.
And Dr. Osmundson, your reaction to this decision by the Council of Canadians?
Well, I think it's fantastic. More and more government leaders and politicians, elected officials, are stepping up to the plate and saying, no, we need to give people freedom. They can get fluoride from their toothpaste and swallow a pea-sized amount if they want fluoride. Of course, the government and the manufacturers say don't swallow it, but if a person wants to swallow fluoride, they have other sources of fluoride. They can get it in their foods. They can get it in the medications. So when we give people freedom, that's what our countries are all about, is giving people as much freedom as possible. And finally, elected officials are saying, okay, let's give people freedom.
Emma Lou with the Council of Canadians, just before we let you go, and we really appreciate you calling in this morning. What are you now going to do with this resolution? Are you going to actively now help communities ditch fluoride?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we've been working on this issue for a number of years now, and one of the projects that we're working on is called the Blue Communities. I mean, the work that we've been doing started with work with OSACOR, which is a Quebec-based group, which, as you may know, Quebec, there's only 3% of the Quebec population that drinks fluoridated water. And so we've been working in opposing the Charest government's plan to increase fluoridation in water.
If people, we have to move on here. Just want to ask you one quick question. If people want to check on the truth of what we're saying and what you're saying, is there a website that they go to, the Council of Canadians website, where they could read this for themselves?
Yes, so they just go to canadians.org, and under water topics, there's an unfluoridated page.
Well, we love on this show to give people a high five on the radio when they have good news. So we're giving you a high five, Emma Lou.
Excellent.
And thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, now I promised that I was going to ask Dr. Connett, because we never assume that our listeners are fully up to speed on this issue. I asked Dr. Osman earlier to explain how fluoride is not effective on this issue of tooth decay. Now I want to ask Dr. Connett the question I promised. Is that it literally is linked to a number of serious health issues. In other words, it's not safe, Dr. Connett.
Absolutely. But before I get into that, Andy, if I may, I'd like to segue back to what Bill was saying, because I, too, was shocked when I looked at the evidence when we were writing the book, The Case Against Fluoride. When we looked at the evidence of benefit that it worked, it's very, very weak indeed. And now we know why. We know now why you can't see a difference in tooth decay between communities which are fluoridated and communities that are not fluoridated, countries which are fluoridated, countries which are not fluoridated. And the answer is simple. Fluoride works topically. If there's any benefit from fluoride, it works on the surface of the tooth. It doesn't work from inside the body. And so using that as a segue, there is not one single process in the body that's ever been shown to need fluoride. So when you expose every tissue in the body, especially for a baby that is bottle-fed and getting 200 times more fluoride than a breastfed baby, that baby is exposing all its tissues to fluoride. We're exposing that baby's tissues to fluoride. And so what are the health concerns about that? Number one, it can cross the blood-brain barrier. And we have now 25 studies which show an association with lowered IQ in children and moderate to high exposure of fluoride in countries which have, unfortunately, high natural levels of fluoride in their water, countries like India, China, Mexico, Iran, and so on. Now, going back to Health Canada, Health Canada, when they reviewed this issue in 2007, 2009, looked at five of those IQ studies, and I pointed out that they'd ignored 18. There were actually 23 studies that they could have looked at on this. And when they came out with their final report, Health Canada, in 2011, to my utter amazement, they still had only looked at five studies. They completely ignored the other 18 studies that I had sent to them. So there is no margin of safety here. This is key. If you look at the levels at which IQ is lowered in China and the villages that I actually went to visit, if you look at the levels which estimated to lower IQ, 1.9 parts per million in the water, there is no margin of safety for all children drinking water at, say, 0.7 parts per million, 0.8 parts per million. Some children drink much more water than others. And in addition, you have to consider that there's usually a tenfold range of sensitivity to any impact, any negative impacts. So you'd have to have a safety factor.
Dr. Conant, if I could just jump in, can you just run down? I know this is going over familiar territory for those who heard your presentation at the London Public Library, but just boom, 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 one, two, three, four, five, go as far as you want in terms of the serious health issues related to fluoride.
Okay, number one, about 50% of the fluoride that you take in each day from every source, toothpaste, water, etc., accumulates in the bones. And the first symptoms of fluoride damaging the bone is just like arthritis, pains, stiffness in the joints. We have millions of people with arthritis in Canada and the United States, and nobody's looking to see if there's a connection with drinking fluoridated water your lifetime. As the fluoride continues to accumulate, it makes the bones more brittle. We're very concerned about increased hip fracture rates in adults, in seniors. In addition, fluoride interferes with the thyroid gland. And there are millions of people with underactive thyroid gland in Canada and the United States. And again, none of our authorities are looking to see if that could be connected with fluoridation. Fluoride accumulates in the pineal gland, which makes this very important hormone called melatonin. Again, no effort in Canada to reproduce that study or to investigate whether there might be the shortened time to puberty is one result of lowered melatonin levels in children. No attempt whatsoever to check this out. So the biggest crime here is that the people that promote this practice so enthusiastically are not doing the basic studies to see if it's harming anybody. But we know it's harming people, Andy, because in the United States, 41% of children aged 12 to 15, 41% have a condition called dental fluorosis, which is caused by fluoride, ingesting fluoride.
Is that the white spots on the teeth?
Yeah, the white spots, which become streaks, patches, become discolored and so on, eventually make the teeth more brittle. And in its moderate and severe forms, it costs about $1,000 a tooth to put veneers on, and they have to replace several times. And Bill Osmondson is an expert on this because his specialty is cosmetic dentistry. So he's doing this for a living. In fact, I think he might confirm that dentists today are making far more money out of the problems caused by fluoride than they would be treating the small amount of dental decay that we would have without it.
Dr. Osmondson, would you weigh in on that?
Absolutely, and DePaul is correct. When you look at the money that is being made from fluoride by the dentists, at first I said, no, that's not possible, that's not true. We don't look at it as a money-making endeavor. I mean, we only are picking up depending on how much topical fluoride we use. For instance, we only pick up about $50,000 to $80,000 a year on topical applications of fluoride. But then, you know, that is quite a bit of money. The second thing is when you look at the cosmetic work, if public health dentists treat the very poor and they don't do anything with cosmetics, but when people get a little bit more money, they say, hey, my smile doesn't look good, please fix my smile. And there's a fair amount of money that's being spent on cosmetic dentistry because of dental fluorosis. But the other problem that is we're just beginning to learn about is fractured teeth. In other words, when you have a hard tooth, and fluoride does make the tooth hard, then it becomes more brittle, and it fractures and cracks and splits more. And many people have had crowns. Well, one of the reasons for crowns is because they had a lot of decay, but another reason for crowns is because the tooth also fractured, split, cracked, broke, and they had to have an implant, or they had to have a root canal, or they've had to have other kinds of treatment, especially the crowns. So when you consider crowns, some of them are caused because of an increase in fracture of the tooth. Then the costs from fluoride actually are much higher.
Doctor, can you hold that thought? I'm just getting angry here. I got to calm myself down. My blood pressure is going up because the question I want to ask you when after we take a short break is this. Like, who are these? I'm trying to be generous now. I'm thinking my mother may be listening from up above. But who are these morons who are preventing us from making the right decision on fluoride when we're presented with this overwhelming evidence? And I'm talking specifically about medical health units, which won't even take an hour to do the proper research. We'll be back to ask both of our doctor experts in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. I would never pick on a doctor. I would never pick on a profession. But Dr. Osmundson, you're a highly respected dentist. You're now in a battle with the city of Seattle on this issue of fluoride. You say that worldwide, half of your colleagues are still supporting fluoride in water. Why, when the evidence that you've given us over the last 40 minutes is so overwhelming?
Well, because they don't look at the research on both sides. And the research is that opposing fluoride is not presented to them in school. It's not presented to them in continuing education. Those people who speak up against fluoridation are prevented from giving courses and prevented from speaking out, and they are disciplined, so they go quiet. Dentists are picked on by their colleagues if they speak up against the status quo, against what other people are doing. Now, when I have a master's in public health, and the real key here are the public health dentists. They work a lot for the poor, but they also work for government, and there's several factors of why they promote fluoridation. Number one, it's policy. Policy is more important than people. So they want to promote policy because this is what's happened. In my public health program, one of the reasons I left the public health program is because the last course that I took in my public health schooling, the professor said, it makes no difference what the science says. It's not your job to evaluate the science. You are to promote policy. It's policy that's important, not science. So when you have Cooney promoting fluoridation, he hasn't looked at the science. He's been told not to look at the science. He only promotes policy and the science that supports the policy. So the general dentist out there who's working very hard with, you know, 100,000 different materials and products that he's got to deal with, and patients and business and all the rest that keep him going, they don't have time to look at something like fluoridation. This is a non-issue to them. They just regurgitate tradition.
Dr. Paul Connett, I have to ask you, because I was so intrigued by your answer at that lecture here in London on this issue of why isn't Dr. Bryna Warshawski and our chief medical officer of health here in London, why aren't they? I mean, I believe they're good people, and I believe they have our health in their hearts, that they want us all to be healthy and want to give the best advice. So why aren't they spending a weekend with your book and looking at the clear evidence? What is preventing them from having an epiphany, a conversion, and then coming on a show like this or holding a news conference and saying, you know what, we were wrong?
Well, I think, Andy, she would be out of work the next day if she made a statement like that in public. I think it's well understood that as a public health, I've forgotten the title of this lady, but their position working for the health department is, as Bill has said, it's to promote policy. And as long as they're promoting policy, it's honky-dory. The moment they oppose policy, they're very vulnerable. Every bureaucrat knows that. If you oppose policy, you're not going to get promotion. You're possibly going to be out of a job.
We're almost out of time. I want to ask you, Dr. Conant, Dr. Paul Conant, for a brief message for Dr. Graham Pollitt and for Dr. Brian Warshawski and for every medical health unit across the land, and then I want to ask the same of Dr. Osmundson.
Okay, here's a challenge. The Fluoride Action Network will pay for 3 or 4 experts to come to London, Ontario in the spring. You choose your dates to have a 2-4-hour debate forum on this. We represent the arguments that fluoridation doesn't work and that fluoridation is not safe. And then let's have representatives from Health Canada, the local health unit, and anybody else, a doctor or dentist, anybody else that they can find, a panels of 3 and 4. Let the public, let the decision makers hear from both sides over an extended period of time, 2 hours for each side to present their arguments. And I say right now, Andy, that challenge, or there's the challenge. Go ahead with it. But my bet is they won't be prepared to do that because they know the science is not on their side and they would lose such a conference.
Now, here's another challenge for the listeners, and that is to go to your city councillors and ask for the safety studies. If and when you do receive any information from the city councillors, pass it by Paul Conant. Dr. Conant, you've been gracious enough to offer to screen the data to see if there's any value to any research that is being sent to citizens here in London. Can they email you through the Fluoride Action Network's website?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Or they could email me directly, pconnet@gmail.com. That's 2 N's and 2 T's. And I should have done this before, Pam, but let me do it now. You asked me a specific question. Have there been health studies on hexafluorosilicic acid, the chemical used to fluoridate? And the answer is no. There have been no toxicological studies. And if you ask for them, you won't get them. There are other issues which I responded to, and that is there's not been enough studies on fluoride or the health of communities that are fluoridated in Canada.
Dr. Osmundson,
blind on every front.
Thank you, Dr. Conant. I promised Dr. Osmundson a message for our medical authorities here in London.
Well, you can contact me at bill@teachingsmiles.com, plural on the smiles, teachingsmiles.com, Bill, B-I-L-L, at teachingsmiles.com. And it's much easier to have an open mind and quietly look and read Paul's book or read the research quietly on a weekend. But the message to them is, look at the science. You're talking about people's health. We're talking about an 8 IQ point drop, a tripling of the mental retardation in the United States with fluoridated water. And I can show you the research. I can show you the problems. Throughout the entire population, an 8 IQ point drop is what it's looking like we're getting now on with fluoridation. We've got to seriously look at this. This is a crisis, probably one of the worst things that governments are doing to their people.
Well, I would say to them, quite frankly, if they don't do what you've just suggested, they should simply resign or retire and let somebody else do the job, so we get some real answers and some real action on the issue of fluoride. Because if they're wrong on this one and hiding the truth, heaven knows what other health issues are they not giving us the skinny on. Dr. Conant, thank you so much.
Thank you, Andy.
And Dr. Osmundson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy and Pam.
Thank you.
And thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Andy.
Are they listening? Are they going to react?
Well, I think the listeners need to do more proactive action here. They need to contact their city councillors and ask for this research that shows that HFSA is safe.
11 o'clock news just around the corner. When we come